Caleb Carr is a best-selling author of The Alienist and The Angel of Darkness. He has created a contemporary psychological thriller haunted by the shadowy hands of established power in his new novel, Surrender, New York. He will discuss the new work on this week's book show tomorrow afternoon at 3 and Thursday evening at 8:30. Carr is also a military historian. He's worked at the Council on Foreign Relations, Foreign Affairs Quarterly, and taught military history, including world military history, the history of American intelligence, and insurgency and counterinsurgency at Bard College. This morning we discuss with him current events. When you look at the situation that we are in militarily right now of what many are calling the unending war, we have this ongoing debate of boots on the ground versus certain strikes and, of course, terrorism concerns. And we also look at what is happening with ISIS, which again brings to our concerns, our post 9/11 concerns of terrorism. How do you look at what we are going through right now in a historical sense and put it into some perspective?
I've written a lot this past winter. I wrote a lot for various publications, a lot of op-ed pieces about San Bernardino and then about France. It is a long war. It is a long and difficult war. We started out fighting it the wrong way. It seemed not. It seemed like we were, I actually was in favor of the initial approach, because it seemed that we were taking sort of a more forceful version of what we're doing now, which was to go after the leaders of the people who were actually a danger, not occupy their countries. When occupation came along, it was obvious that it was going to fail. For whatever reasons, right now, the Obama administration in the last year has either stumbled on or formulated, depending on your opinion, the correct policy, which is special forces troops on the ground. And they're there, and there are more of them than we think. They're playing a wider role than we think. But they're still leaving the heavy lifting to, especially in Iraq with ISIS, Iraq and Syria, to Syrian rebels, to the Kurds, to Shiite militias. That's what we should have been doing in the first place. It's taken us 15 years to figure this out. And it's working. Just a couple of days ago, for instance, there were some key victories against ISIS, which went beyond just victories against ISIS, because they were closing off. We're starting to close off the exit points from ISIS-held territory, which means that the threats to Europe and beyond will become far less, because they can know the flow of people that they can just send in and out of their territory is going to be heavily constricted and hopefully stopped. This is going to take a long time. This is a snake that has been a long time growing, and that we spent a long time fighting the wrong way, chasing its tail, and it's going to take a while to kill it. But I am not a defeatist on this.
Do we have, as a nation, the patience to go through this?
Excellent question. If people will stop listening to cable television, and because, honest to God, cable news has just become panic mills.
Yeah.
Every time something happens. San Bernardino was not a terrorist attack, in my opinion. It was a couple of lunatics who chose to associate themselves at the last minute with ISIS as, on a telephone. There was no evidence that they were connected to them, no evidence that they were trained by them. Same thing with Orlando. Some lunatic is going out for his own deranged reasons. He happens to be a Muslim, so when he's about to die, he figures, all right, I'm going to connect myself to ISIS. And then ISIS says, sure, we'll take him. ISIS is claiming credit for just about everything that happens. That's not the actual truth. But it sells on television. It sells hysteria. We've got to stop selling panic and hysteria in our news. It's very strange. I was just talking the other night with some of my family members about the fact that imagine if all of this had been happening during the Vietnam era. Can you imagine any of the great anchors then, Walter Cronkite, you know, Huntley Brinkley, Eric Severide, any of these people talking in the terms that you hear on news now? They just wouldn't do it.
Nor would you expect to hear Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson using the rhetoric that political candidates, Donald Trump, are using as well, that feed in to that cable system.
He said it himself. He's gotten a free campaign by just saying there's no wiring between his brain and his jaws, and whatever he says just comes out of his mouth, and he's gotten a free campaign off of it. Because instead of studying any ideas he might have, we just pay attention to what outrageous thing he's just said. And the kind of particularly anti-Muslim, but also anti-Hispanic, anti any number of people, rhetoric that he's using, this is really, you know, if you go back to the great old science fiction movie, Forbidden Planet, he's a monster from the id. This is a guy who's going to our reptile brain, going to all of our most primitive instincts. He's inspiring fear, violence, dread, none of it with reason. He's just wired into it, and he can manipulate it with all these crazed statements, which turn out to be not to be true, of course. They're disproved within hours or days. But, you know, his most ardent supporters, of whom I'm one of the people who don't believe he doesn't have quite as many ardent supporters or near as many ardent supporters as a lot of people think. And that may be because I live up here. And I know a lot of really sensible rural Republicans who think he's out of his mind. I don't think in the end he's a danger in terms of gaining the presidency. The danger he poses is exactly what you say. It's stirring this kind of stuff up in the first place and making people think it's okay to say this kind of stuff. It's not. It's really not. We're just dismantling the fabric of civil society.
There have been many who have made a Hitler-like connection to Donald Trump, certainly in the early days of the campaign. Do you think that is a fair comparison?
An absolutely fair comparison. Hitler, when he started out, the only unfair part of it is that Hitler at least served in the German army and was wounded in the First World War. Donald Trump can make no such claim. But otherwise, when the Nazi Party started, they were considered buffoons, a joke. You know, the brown shirt bully boys, they were considered clowns by most of German society. And they slowly but surely ingratiated themselves with that same kind of fear. As the Depression grew worse in Germany, it was worse in Germany than anywhere else, they wanted somebody to blame. We want somebody to blame for our fears, you know, and we have tons of fears right now. Because of these mass shootings that go on, and we want one single group or a couple of single groups to blame for it. And it's a fair comparison. I don't think that it will hold up in the end because, you know, one hates to say anything even that might imply something positive about Hitler, but Donald Trump is just not that smart.
And that idea of not being that smart, I guess, has sort of been gnawing at me for a long time as to whether, because people say that, well, he's incredibly good at manipulating people. He's incredibly good at crafting this message. He's incredibly good, and it seems isn't some of this just dumb luck?
A lot of it is pure dumb luck. He hit our society at a moment when things were happening that made people terrified. Mm. And there he comes along with these panacea statements. You know, people feel that this country is becoming unjust in its economic structure. That's true. Going to make America great again. How's he going to do it? No idea. Going to restore the middle class. How's he going to do it? No idea. It's just a coincidence of timing. It really is. And unfortunately, so was the Nazi Party. But again, there you had somebody running the thing that really had a tremendously evil but brilliant brain. Donald Trump is missing that particular element.
We have been talking about global terrorism and this idea of ISIS. In your new novel, Surrender, New York, we meet Trajan Jones, a psychological profiler, and Michael Lee, a trace evidence expert. And they're fighting crime, ultimately trying to solve crime at home. Are the two linked? Are fights and our and war and global terrorism and the explosion of us are those linked? Are they together?
Yeah. Yeah. There's no question of that. And that's where we get it. That's where we get into this idea that nobody, do we really want to overhaul the system? Do we really want to take a hard look at one of the reasons Trump is popular with the people he's popular with is precisely because he offers no specifics. If you try to break down what it would take, say, in New York State to fix the child welfare system, child care system, and deal with some of these problems, it's enormously complicated and require people of tremendous dedication who know what they're doing and have some experience. Hopefully that will happen, but it's not going to happen with people who just offer these kind of silly ideas. So in the meantime, what you get is people getting more and more scared that society is falling apart for no apparent reason. And if they're offered an easy reason in any of these cases, serial killers, great thing. You know, it's scary, it's cool. You see it all the time on TV. People almost gravitate towards it in the book. There's almost a feeling that the state knows it can sell that version of facts. But if the answer is more complicated than that, nobody really wants to get near it. That's like terrorism. You know, it's a terrible fear, and it would be great to think, you know, apparently Donald Trump in his 1-hour security briefing asked 3 times, why can't we use nuclear weapons? You know, because he wants to bomb ISIS with nuclear weapons. Well, you can't. You know, I mean, you could, but you would be branding America the most barbarous modern nation in a long time.
When you look back at your career, and as I mentioned, that of a military historian, but at what point did you think, I want to write a book like The Alienist that struck such a chord with readers?
The Alienist came out of a desire that because the first book I ever published was a novel back in 1980, and it was a novel that has fortunately been forgotten because it was very much a young man's novel and didn't need to be discovered. But there was always a desire. I always had a desire because of my own experiences to talk about my own life and child abuse and violence in families and all of these subjects. But I found that doing it from the first person just didn't, you know, doing it in a literal way about my own life, the memoir style that everybody was so in love with at the time and for a long time thereafter, it just didn't work for me. And it took me years. I went back to military history because A, I could make a living at it, and B, I liked it, and C, because I couldn't find a way to write about what I wanted to write about and make it what I call universal enough for people. A story that everybody could plug into, not just people with a similar background. And so when I struck on this idea of, you know, a guy who deals with abused children, a guy who also hunts down people who abuse children, that was the initial thought, was that's a good idea. And once I had it all worked out in my head, that part of it worked out all in my head, people think I chose the time period first. I didn't. I chose the plot first, and then I went looking for a time period. And it turned out that 1896 was about as early as I could go, have them know the things they know and have it be real. And then all these other coincidences, if you're on the right track, coincidences in research always start falling into place. Teddy Roosevelt being police commissioner at the time, great idea. The fact that William James had only recently started the first psychology lab in the U.S. at Harvard, great to have one of his students be the hero of the book. So that's what always tells you you're on the right track, is when for me anyway, because I'm have a historical training, when research starts to support the story, then you know you're on the right track. And that was the golden moment for me.
There will be more Alienist books. You have signed on for that. And what we've heard for a long time is that this will be coming to television, and I assume that is closer than it has been.
It's closer than it has been, but it's farther away at the same time. They made some terrible missteps in the beginning, but I don't know how close they are, because supposedly I was going to be a consultant on the show. I haven't been consulted once, so I have no idea how close they are.
Is that okay with you? I remember Robert B. Parker telling me, you know, there was a point where he was very involved in the making of the series in his Spencer books. And then there was also the point where he said, okay, I'm just going to take the money and run.
Right. It's been really hard for me. I fought for 20 years to keep a bad movie of the Alienist from being made. And they tried to make many bad movies out of it. It's hard for me to sit back and watch these people make this TV show without any contribution from me. On the other hand, at a certain point, you just have to get on with things.
Mm.
And that's part of what Surrender was about, was I needed to sort of clear my head and sneak my way back into this world. That's why we have Trajan Jones being the expert on Kreitzer. It was a way to touch base with it without quite going back to it yet. And the other thing that I needed to do was figure out if I could tell a story firsthand from the psychologist's point of view, because the next two Alienist books will be told from Kreitzer's point of view. And a lot of people sort of throw up their hands and say, oh no, you can't do that. It's like having Sherlock Holmes tell a story. I mean, Conan Doyle had Sherlock Holmes tell a story once. It was a terrible failure. But Kreitzer's not Sherlock Holmes. He's a much more personable guy. And you can see behind the curtain with him a little bit and actually enjoy him more. But it's tough. I think it's tough for anybody to just take the money and run. A lot of people say they do it. I think it's kind of tough for anybody to actually. Mm. It's like people who say they never read their own reviews. It's like I immediately, the conversation's over at that point for me. It's like, yeah, you do. You know you do.
And you care.
And you care.
The new novel is Surrender, New York. It is published by Random House. Caleb Carr, great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Joe, it's great to be here again. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Caleb Carr is the best-selling author of The Alienist, and his new novel is Surrender, New York, which we will discuss in this week's book show tomorrow afternoon at 3, Thursday evenings at 8:30 at WAMC.org or via podcast. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.